always have to be starting at 9. Should we get these things done before 9? IT, please. Colleagues, good morning and welcome to our meeting this morning on the Integrated Financial Management System. I'm not sure I can say it's our last meeting. We'll wait for the program because we still have a lot of outstanding work. So, I know which is, there's a mood which is in a confronted and then Mazapan. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the Deputy Minister of Finance, the Deputy Minister of Communications and Digital Technologies, the Deputy Minister of Public Affairs Administration, the DG Finance, DPSA, and Comms, and Babun TV, the Head of Unit of the SIU, and his team, Auditor General. Colleagues, we met on the 13th of September 2023, where we were receiving a briefing from the SIU, DPSA, National Treasury, and CETA on the status of investigations and implementation challenges of the Integrated Financial Management System. We meet today to get a progress report of the outcomes of the SIU investigation. Noting that there have been several investigations done on the IFMS and money was spent on these investigations, Deloitte Nexus, the internal audit report, the PPA investigation and SIU, we need an update on consequence management on those issues. And of course the status and progress report of the IFMS project since the meeting of September 2023. And to see how far we are with the MOU with the DPSA. Importantly, the time frames of the implementation of the pilot projects of the system and whether these will be met. And then the broader question is, what is the projected time for the completion of the project? Because this thing is like, there's a lot of to and fro on IFMS. And money is being spent. And it's continuously an audit outcome matter every time. I think I was still in varsity when this IFMS thing started. I got here, it was still a thing. My contract is ending on the 28th of May, it's still a thing. Something's got to give. So I think we need to close off on our report on this side with a clear direction and status of IFMS. We cannot continue in carrying these costs to the fiscus without any clarity in terms of whether it's been utilized, will it be utilized, how it's been utilized. There's too many questions and too little money. So when we postponed this meeting, 3 weeks ago, it was on the basis that consultations at the final stage were being done amongst the various departments and stakeholders, and we agreed to that to give it space and time. So today, we are hoping to get answers because a postponement was requested, and 2 weeks were requested. I think we've given 3. So that is why I hear colleagues. So what I'm going to do, colleagues, we're going to start with the National Treasury, and then we're going to go to DPSA, and we've got their presentation. I think we've got all the hard copies, the soft copies were circulated, and then Babu TV will come to you once we have concluded that. But before we start, I'm going to request the DM Finance to make any opening remarks, DM Comms and DPSA at their seats. In fact, I am kind of what DPSA was a few guys, actually. Let's start with National Treasury because they are the anchor of this whole project. So, opening remarks, and then we'll go to thank Chair Kopa, Honourable Kamwa, Honourable Members, Deputy Ministers, all DGs present, colleagues from the SIU, AG. Let me start by indicating that part of the reason why our minister, and I also take it that other ministers are not here, is because the cabinet today. So it's not like by design that we all come here as deputy ministers. It's because this meeting, which can be postponed, because as you correctly said, Chair, it was supposed to have taken place last week, 3 weeks ago, and it was postponed so that more consultation amongst ourselves as departments take place. So I thought it would be important for me just to formally table the apology of our ministers for their absence here. Chair, from our side, first we want to thank you for giving us this opportunity once more to come back to you and report on what we have done since we last met last time. And I wouldn't say much at this stage. I think I will, at the right time, because the sequence is for all deputy ministers to say something. But from my side, I think all what we want to say is entailed in our presentation, which will be led by our Director General of Treasury, Dr. Duncan Sturte. So from my side, Chair, I want to stop here and maybe follow your order that all DMs should say what they need to say as a preliminary remarks. But from my side, I would come back once DG has presented. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Kamwa, and all the Honourable Members of the COPA, Deputy Minister's President, SIU DGs, and all the colleagues. I'm not going to say much, Chair, as you know that the primary driver of this program is Treasury, and we are playing a supportive role, facilitating, and as CETA we are supposed to be implementing the project, so we get guidance from National Treasury in as far as this project is concerned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jim. DPSA?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you. Good morning to members of the Portfolio Committee, to the AG, to Treasury officials that are here, to the head of the Special Investigation Unit, and the team that you've worked with. Let me say on protocols, etc. I must actually also follow on the footsteps of the Deputy Minister of Communications to say that the CPSA, we're not really going to be saying much because the process, the Interstate Financial Management System, is a process that's actually led by Treasury, even if we were going to be the, or we are still probably going to be the main beneficiaries of the outcome of the process. So we will allow Treasury to continue to lead the discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's send over to the DG of National Treasury. This is the first time we've met in this new capacity. Welcome. We wish you well with your responsibility. Did you go over to you?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the words of welcome. Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Ministers, and colleagues from the various institutions, and thank you for giving us an opportunity to present an update on IFMS. Chair, let me just check with you. On my side, it showed the presentation showing fine, but it looks like it's not on that side, so perhaps someone just needs to do...
Don't worry. We've got hard copies.
Okay.
This arrangement apparently was concluded last night after we went through the start of the year. So you need not worry. We've got soft copies and hard copies. Let's proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm joined by the Accountant General, Shabir, with me today, as well as Dikeledi from the OAG, who has been working with myself and the rest of the department on this project. Chair and Honourable Members, we wanted to provide an update along three lines. First, as the Honourable Members would be aware, we...
Sorry, did you?
My apology to the meeting. I'm worried if the meeting is broadcast on screen tonight, it would be only fair for those that are watching at home to be able to make sense of what's happening. So the IT or the background can make please ensure that they sort out the presentation. My apologies for the
question. Yes, sir. Please just check with IT that they get the system going. And they are streaming. Okay, but we'll proceed. Proceed, please.
Thank you, Chair. Our update will proceed along three lines. So we'd like to start with an update to Honourable Members on our engagements with the SIU on this matter. Honourable Members will be aware of the fact that when we met last, the report, the draft report was shared, and we've since responded to that, and we'll give an update on that regard. We've also, as per the request from DPSA and this committee, in fact, we also have, since the last meeting, had several engagements with the DPSA on the implementation of the HR modules, because from their perspective, that was a key challenge that they wanted to resolve. And we'll provide an update on IFMS implementation going forward. So in terms of our engagements with the SIU, as I mentioned earlier, on the 13th of September, the SIU presented a draft report to SCOPA on the investigation. Following the receipt of that report, we were then allowed by the SIU the opportunity to submit representations by the 22nd of January. We appointed, following that initial meeting in September, we in fact appointed new senior counsel. We appointed new senior counsel in order to assist us with the representations by the 22nd of January, which we then did submit. Our representations, Chair and Honourable Members, covered various procedural and substantive issues that were raised in the SIU draft report. Our intention is not to obviously go through that submission in detail today. That is for our process with the SIU, but we just want to make the point that we felt that there were various procedural issues that needed to be addressed, as well as more substantive issues, including the implication of some of the findings for the ability of accounting officers to exercise their responsibilities. We also shared those representations and we notified the SIU accordingly that we would be also be sharing those representations with SAPS, MPA, and the Presidency, given the President's and the Presidency's role in being recipients of the final report. On the 26th of February, the SIU confirmed that they are still considering our representation and that the presidential report will be submitted on or before the 31st of March. And of course, the SIU would then be able to provide an update in that regard today. Just in terms of the implementation of the HR module, a key issue that came out of the September meeting was the need to work with the DPSA to find a way of expediting the HR module that's in embedded in the IFMS plan. They wanted to be able to implement the DPSA, a centralized e-recruitment module for the public service that is outside of the scope of the IFMS, and did not want to be subjected to the delays associated with that process. We agreed with them and have had several engagements with the DG of DPSA, where we agreed that a separate HR module is the best way forward, provided we ensure that that HR module is going to be interoperable with the broader IFMS system once that is concluded. And the reason we agreed to this was because we did not want DPSA's activities to be subjected to the ongoing uncertainty of IFMS due to the status of the SIU investigation. DPSA colleagues are here and they can provide an update, but we have had several engagements with them to determine the scope of the implementation of this module as well as the impact on this broader integrated system. The key point here being that we want to ensure it, its interoperability with whatever IFMS looks like and when it is finalized. What does all of this mean, Chair and Honourable Members, for IFMS implementation? We are awaiting the completion of the SIU report in order to inform the way forward for IFMS. Depending on the outcomes of that report and depending on how it is processed, that will obviously determine what happens. In the meantime, Chair, and just to respond to a question that was embedded in your opening remarks, in the meantime, we are not spending any money on IFMS. So in the current financial year, the 23-24 financial year, we have not spent any funds on IFMS, precisely for this reason. The implementation activities remain on hold as we await the outcome of the SIU investigation and any subsequent processes that may follow. We have, of course, engaged our legal counsel in this regard to make sure that we don't end up in a situation where we compromise or preempt the outcome of the SIU report and therefore find ourselves in a difficult position. As a result, the negotiations that the Accountant General started last year with Oracle for the implementation of a cloud solution was placed on hold because we did not want to fall foul of the SIU process. We are also, Chair and Honourable Members, and this I think came out of the last meeting in September, where there was a real plea for us to look at how do we expedite the resolution of this and how do we chart a new way forward for IFMS. So what we have done under the leadership of Shabir, the Accountant General, and his team, we have engaged and started to engage various international and domestic experts to see what are the global lessons and how do we implement those as we reimagine what IFMS can look like. And then finally, given the challenges that have been experienced by IFMS implementation, following the conclusion of the SIU investigation, it is possible, and it's important to highlight that to the Honourable Members here today, that we may in fact pursue a very different direction for IFMS implementation, building on the lessons that have been learned. So the key message from our side, Honourable Chair, is that we there's no fiscal outlay against IFMS currently. We have put all negotiations with the service provider on hold pending the finalization of the SIU report. And we are working with DPSA to proceed on the HR module, the e-recruitment module, so that they are not subjected to these delays. And then as soon as we have a clear way forward, once the SIU report is finalized, then we'll be able to expedite the way forward. Thank you, Honourable Chair and members, for the opportunity. That concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much. Let's go to DPSA on that. I just feel like what has been said would have been said in the letter. DPSA.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not scared because probably even what I'm going to say could have been said in a letter. We really don't have much to say as DPSA, but we had to comply with the request of the committee to appear in respect to this matter. Just a recap from our side, we appeared in the committee to the committee on 13 September, I think, with the colleagues as well from Treasury and SIU, and we did highlight that in the 21-22 financial year we were removed from IFMS by the MPSA at the time, and were brought back in the 22-23 financial year by the acting MPSA. We had not signed the MOU at the time, as there were areas we were still engaging on, including the request we had made for dedicated project management capacity, as the IFMS rollout requires that capability, and the coordination and financing of the IFMS is centralized to National Treasury currently. We have not yet signed the MOU because I think it's been overtaken by other engagements that the DG has reflected on. But we've had ongoing engagements with National Treasury, both at the ministerial level and at our level as officials. Some of the challenges, IFMS challenges, I wish to highlight briefly is that this project is intended to be the cornerstone of digital transformation in the public service, and despite extensive efforts since its inception, there's been significant delays that have been encountered and challenges persist in operationalizing the system. The investigations and in brackets the SIU, I think there's also been a public protector SA investigation and maybe other investigations into the procurement process have also contributed to the delays, and it is not yet clear what the impact of the outcomes will that be on the IFMS itself. And the moratorium on the acquisition of the IT systems, which was issued by Treasury in 2016, all those systems within the scope of IFMS, which would mainly affect your HR module-related systems. So we had a moratorium since 2016, and the majority of requests for deviations received by Treasury, 59%, had to do with the HRM function. This just shows the need in the public service and that departments are ready to roll out and implement, but we've had the moratorium which has made it impossible. Then in terms of the need for digital transformation, IFMS challenges have had a significant impact on the public service and its ability to seize opportunities to digitize and automate administrative processes. For instance, Chair, we get a lot of questions from Parliament about public servants doing business with the state, public servants facing disciplinary action, all kinds of information that if we had a system, a digital system that has capability, an HRM system that has capability, we would at the press of the button be able to get that information. But now, just on a simple thing as qualification, we rely on the use of a remuneration system which is PESA, which is really an old legacy system that has its own challenges, and we rely on it to be able to get information, and some departments do not update information, and you can't really force them beyond just sending circulars and begging people to be able to do that. The importance of modernizing and digitizing HRM functions is emphasized by the adoption of the National Framework for Professionalization. Our public sector reforms are not going to be implementable if we are continuously subjected to the delays that we have experienced, and we cannot automate and digitize the HRM functions in the public service. So for us, digital transformation holds the key to unlocking greater efficiency and effectiveness in the public service and addressing the evolving demands of governance and administration. In terms of the way forward, the DPSA as the policy owner for HRM in the public service must lead the public service in the implementation of an integrated HRM system so that the delays and uncertainty on IFMS do not critically impact on DPSA's ability to deliver on its mandate. This should be guided by a digital transformation strategy and plan for the public service. For us, an e-recruitment module for the public service is a priority. And for our department, but also for the public service, we should all be on the same platform by now, just on e-recruitment. And it can be implemented independently and integrated later. We've had engagements with CETA. They presented to us a system that they have that can be deployed immediately, but they were charging us an arm and a leg, and we didn't have the money to pay for it. So we abandoned that process. But CETA did indicate they were willing to engage because the system is already developed and it's available. DPSA requires dedicated human resources and financial resources for us to be able to run a program of this nature. My last slide, just looking at concluding remarks, Chair. We just want to highlight again that the integrated human resource management concept document for the minister's approval has been developed, and we will be submitting it before the end of this financial year, which means between today and tomorrow we're sending a formal submission to the minister and deputy minister, and once approved it will then be submitted to the Minister of Finance. An integrated HR system business case. Work has been started, but we start with some technical issues, and we are hoping to engage CETA to also provide some support to us from a technical capability, and even the IFMS team from Treasury. Cabinet memo seeking approval for the integrated HRM project to be separated from the IFMS processes, which are affected by the delays of the investigations and other things. We have to send this memo to Cabinet once the ministers sign off, because it's important that the IFMS project was a decision of Cabinet, and the involvement of DPSA in the project as it is structured was a decision of Cabinet. So we have to go back to Cabinet in relation to that. And of course, the broader work that is being done around developing a new strategy and implementation plan for this project, linking it to the human capital strategy work that's looking at public sector reforms in terms of HR that we have concluded in the current financial year, is very important. Two main critical success factors for us is that the engagements we're having with Treasury must also look at impact and the budget allocation, because we can't operate from zero in terms of being able to do this work. And also we need to prioritize the appointment of dedicated resources who are able to drive and coordinate this integrated HRM project together with key stakeholders. As matters stand, we are living on budget cuts, so we can't even shift and prioritize resources internally. I think we've done sufficient reprioritization internally that we are left as being bones with no meat currently. So that's all from our part, Chair. Thank you very much.
All right. No, thank you very much. You know why I was saying this to the inception, and that's because the postponement gave the impression that you would arrive here with a mega package and roadmap. Now it says we're waiting for the finalization of the SIU, and I'm like, simply also say another postponement. I'm just not sure whether we're landing on the right runway. Because I may ask the question, was this the status of matches 3 weeks ago when we postponed? So I just hope dear you can reflect on that whilst we go through the SIU investigation reports. But I just consultations are gonna be done and we're going to conclude on the matter. Conclusion is not there. Can I hand over to you, please?
Well, thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. DMs, Standard Committee, DGs, my colleagues, we really are appreciative of the opportunity to come and update the Honourable Committee on the process since the last time we appeared. So Honourable Chair, it's not so many slides, but we thought we could probably rehash what we presented the last time, just so that it's clear where the investigation is at the moment and where we are. and we will of course in the presentation also touch on what DG of National Treasury indicated that since the last time as part of the investigative process we did interact with the National Treasury where they indicated that they wanted to make representation really just in the form of saying this is further information that we have which we are of the view that you need to take into account as you investigate and it may then lead to probably a different findings than the one that you presented at Scopa the last time. We will also deal with that. I'm going to allow my colleague, Mr. Lekheto, who is leading the investigation, to really start on slide number 6 to then take the committee through, and then I will come back as we then deal with the actual findings and then the issues around investigations versus what happens on the operation side. Thank you. Mr. Lekheto, if you can proceed, please.
Thank you, Advocate. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Member, Deputy Minister, DG, and all the colleagues present in the meeting. The presentation is just to give an update since the last meeting we met, and we didn't really go into details pertaining to the issue that we presented last time. Then based on the slide, it just indicates that we received a proclamation R4 of 2020, which was also amended by R40 of 2020, and the main issue about the proclamation to investigate the procurement of contracting for integrated financial management system by or on behalf of the National Treasury and the payments made in respect thereof, and the proclamation was amended by way of a proclamation R40. Next slide just gives the background to the investigation, which is when you start with time one commercial of the Shelf Enterprise Resource Planning Solution. The SIU received a whistleblower report alleging corruption and irregularities in the procurement process for the Integrated Financial Management System, which was awarded to Oracle SA Pty Ltd, that is Oracle,
it was alleged that procurement process and the award for the Tier 1 commercial off-the-shelf enterprise resource planning solution was irregular. There was malperformance and or no performance by the service provider and professional consultant or any other person or entity, and also that there was no value for money received by National Treasury, and there was a corrupt senior official at National Treasury who was involved in the award of the current contract to Oracle. A hybrid architect was approved for the IFMS project after Cabinet Memorandum 16 of 2005 was issued with the subject Integrated Financial Management System project. However, after the issue of Cabinet Memorandum 35 of 2013, the solution was changed from a hybrid architect to a COTS ERP. And on the 5th of November 2013, the Cabinet amended the procurement of the COTS ERP. And on the 29th of January 2014, the IFMS Steering Committee approved that the procurement of the COTS ERP solution was to be done through CETA. The focus area of the investigation was to investigate the procurement of and contracting for the IFMS by or on behalf of National Treasury and payments made in respect thereof, and also was to determine whether a proper procurement process was followed, also to verify the malperformance and or non-performance by Oracle or any other person or entity, and also to determine if value for money was received by National Treasury and losses incurred, and also to conduct a corruption investigation, which is to include the profiling and lifestyle audit of officials and service providers. And in terms of the objective of the investigation, it was to review compliance with the prescribed legislation, policy, procedure, directive, and other relevant applicable prescripts in respect of the procurement of goods and services by the state institution, and also to identify irregular and unlawful conduct on the part of the official or employee of the state or any other person, and also to collect lawful admissible evidence to institute civil proceedings, also to set aside contract awarded by the state institution if appropriate, and also to recover public money that was not due, owing or payable in respect of the procurement process that was followed by the state institution. And lastly, was to prevent further losses to the state, and also to repair such evidence for the institution of appropriate disciplinary, administrative, executive and criminal proceedings against complicit parties. And lastly, was to provide recommendation on improvement of systemic weaknesses that would have been identified. And in terms of high-level findings, the SIU has identified the following: that irregular SCM processes were followed, and there was non-compliance with SCM policy and legislation, and there was conflict of interest which was identified, and also we have identified fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In terms of the current status, after the SIU's presentation to SCOPA on the 13th of September 2024, National Treasury requested that they be given an opportunity to make representation in respect of the SIU findings. And the SIU agreed, and National Treasury submitted their representation on the 22nd of January 2024. The SIU has had an opportunity to review National Treasury's representation and the accompanying documentation, which were considered against the SIU findings. The documents provided by National Treasury were in fact instrumental in the SIU investigation and were considered when making our initial findings. After a thorough review and evaluation process of the representation, the SIU advised National Treasury on the 22nd of March 2024 that it still hold the same position, and therefore the SIU finding will still stand that the contract was awarded irregular. Then in terms of the outcome of the investigation, as we have indicated previously, we have referred two disciplinary referrals to National Treasury, and we have issued one blacklisting referral letter to National Treasury. 5 criminal matters were being referred to the National Prosecuting Authority. And in terms of the civil, senior counsel has been appointed and was briefed by the SIU on the 2nd and 3rd and 6th of February 2024, respectively, to assist the SIU in reviewing the available evidence as pertained to the Oracle contract. And systemic recommendations have been identified and are included in the presidential report. Therefore, the presidential report has been compiled but has been put on hold initially, which was awaiting the review of National Treasury representation. The SIU now will proceed to finalize the report. So that's all from the SIU. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable members and GMs. So essentially, the status is that the investigation is complete. That's where we are. And it's been completed, concluded with the findings that we have presented. Of course, during the investigation, we gathered evidence which, of course, we really can't unpack in the committee meeting, but we do have the evidence that supports the findings. As the presentation says, on the 13th, we were requested that amongst others, National Treasury wanted to make a presentation. It's a process that's allowed in investigations before we finalize our findings and report. We made that possible, and as we indicate, in a sense, that evidence wasn't materially new to the investigators. And when we took it into account, we realized that there actually was the evidence that we took into account before we made the findings. And we've reached now the outcomes that have been presented. Now, with regard to the execution of the outcomes, right? So we have found that the contract is irregular. Can you please go back to the on the outcome? Yeah, there we go. If I can spend just a few minutes on this, and it's also supported by slide number 5 in terms of how we do our business. Now, the disciplinary referral that has been referred would have been on the basis of the evidence that we uncovered that indicated the roles of officials in the National Treasury that they would have played in the process of this irregularity, and those referrals would have been issued. So the blacklisting part is against the service provider, based on the findings that we've made. And of course, we expect that process should also unfold. And then the 5 criminal matters that have been referred to the NPA, by law, when we find that there's evidence pointing to criminal action, whether it's a criminal offense envisaged in the PFMA or any other legislation, we are required to refer that to NPA. And NPA will process that with our collaboration, and if necessary, collaboration with the SAPS, in particular the HOC, in many instances. Right, and then bullet point number 4. As we indicate there, we have appointed counsel, of course, our civil litigation division will now. So what has happened is that the investigators gathered evidence that indicated that the SDM process was irregular, there were irregularities. So what happens is they then hand it over to the civil litigation team, particularly relating to the contract at hand. Now the civil litigation team will proceed now really institute civil proceedings. And those civil proceedings are with the intent of cancelling this contract and recovery where appropriate, depending on what the extent of the loss, stroke damage that evidence would have indicated. So the civil proceedings will be instituted in the special tribunal, and that process, now that we've concluded now, listen to the representation, we are now proceeding with the civil proceedings as envisaged. The systemic recommendations, of course, as part of our investigations, where there are weaknesses in the administration system, we continually raise them. And I think it's also important to note that all of the above, the execution of the outcomes, do not wait for the president's report. Because it's essential that we execute on the consequence management, legal findings are there. We've made findings that are supported by evidence, at least as far as we are concerned. Now, based on those findings, we're able to execute. And that's why the disciplinary processes can proceed as we expect, civil proceedings, criminal referrals. Now, because we said as a result of the representations, we put the process of finalizing the report on hold, we will now proceed and now compile the president's report. In a sense, that report will, among others, indicate that these are the findings, these are the outcomes, and this is where we are in executing the findings. So they're really not delayed. I think it's very important to know that. That the speed of action, at least after finalizing, is important. The one part. The issue around whether when we presented last time, we presented the draft report or not. So as we continually present, in SCOPA or other parliamentary committees, is that we would essentially be presenting the status of the investigation. But we really wanted to, you could really treat it as a report, or progress report, but it wasn't a draft presidential report, just to put it on record. It was not a draft presidential report that we presented here on the 13th. It was a status report of the investigation and where we are. And now, we will now proceed, finalize the report to the president. Thank you.
All right. We're going to go to questions. And then you will just indicate, colleagues, where you are directing them to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to everyone for the reports. I'm afraid I am somewhat with you in the view that we haven't really made any progress. There's been some talking and so on. And the IFMAC system is a critical system. It's been in the making, I think, for nearly 20 years. And I think it's so critical that it's hampering the whole country in its ability to function properly. So it is disappointing. And so when I listen to the SIU report, it's kind of done, but there's no next step in terms of the system. There are next steps in terms of holding people accountable, and absolutely that must happen. But in terms of the system, I'm at a loss as to what the next step is there, and getting that going, although I'm not being entirely corrected, because Duncan has indicated that there's agreement about the DPSA system on employees, or whatever it's called, moving ahead. So I'm wrong. There is some movement. But the big picture, I'm a bit lost. So I'd like to have some indication probably from you, Duncan, as to where does it go from here? You know what the SIU report is saying. Presumably you've thought about this, and what is the next step in terms of the whole system, the big system? then to you, Andy, in terms of the outcomes, who are the disciplinary referrals? Who are the people involved? I assume that the blacklisting is Oracle. Is that blacklisting then based on malfeasance on the part of Oracle, as opposed to the failure of following the correct procedures in terms of National Treasury's role in the system? Has Oracle been naughty here? Because then presumably they may be part of the five criminal matters you mentioned. Who are the, or what are the entities or people involved in the five criminal matters referred to the NPA? Mr. Chairman, let me stop there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I welcome all the presentations and all. I'd like to follow on the questions that have already been asked. Maybe I should start with the National Treasury and just check with these contracts that you do with IFMS or similar. Do you, you know, one of the biggest problems I found with these service providers is things that are called out of scope and all of that. That you find that government departments tend to sign contracts and you have to pay all kinds of monthly premiums. But every time you want a particular petition to be done, then you are told that out of scope. So you then end up with costs that are running wild because everything is just out of scope. So I wanted to just check with IFNS project or similar, as the National Treasury, have you got systems in place to ensure that there is maybe very little or nothing in terms of so-called out of scope, because I just find that is one way to rip off government, that they just lay the basic infrastructure and everything, everything else is out of scope, so you actually pay double after all is said and done. That's the first question. But also I wanted to just understand now that with what we know now with the processes, I'm just struggling a chat to understand why is this thing not moving. If I listen to DPSA, DPSA seems to be almost like it's a life support system that this thing must provide. But SIU is saying, depending on how the processes work in their referrals and everything, there's a chance this thing might just be declared unlawful and stopped. I just don't know where that leaves us 20 years later. Can we just give some comfort? While at the same time we know that we need to have a digitized government system, we need to have everything, but what SIU is saying makes me nervous to say where will this leave us? I mean, it's like we're in limbo to no end. And then on the SIU, what I wanted to just check, not all that's covered in some of the documents that I haven't seen. Last time when we were here, my biggest issue was Fortay. If there's that proclamation, I was looking for the date in which you amended that proclamation and the date in which you handed to Mr. Ramaphosa to sign. Because I'm not finding that there is seriousness in holding executive accountable. Just to remind you, you know that you've got that fake master's degree in the Eastern Cape by the premier there. So, and he relied on a loophole to avoid being dealt with. And I know that you've amended the thing, but I just don't have the date. If you could please indicate, because we want to see what is it that is stopping that proclamation from being signed off, as it were. And then on the outcomes, I think I would have had the same question on the affected individuals. I think by now, I don't know if processes allow that. I mean, if Mazamba here already knows the companies, Oracle, the individuals, are you at liberty to tell us who are the people that have been referred for disciplinary and all of that? And then the other companies that were also part of the investigation, have you given now them a clean bill of health? I just want to know this because some of these companies, they talk to us, they say, because one of the biggest issues that happens in the private sector is that once SIU is on your tail, nobody wants to deal with you as a company. And then you find that SIU is maybe still talking to you in a person of interest and all of that, but it's almost like you tame people by tagging them as people of interest. And I've got no problem with people of interest that you finally nail or not nail, whatever. But to keep a person under some dark cloud as a person of interest, but you don't pronounce this person, you're actually killing business people out there. So I just want to know that can you today say that now that this thing is done, can we then say that all other companies that were persons of interest or whatever, can you give them I'm not advocating for left or right, but I'm advocating for certainty. Tell them you are in the dock, tell them you are not, you are out of the dock, whatever. But I just don't think it's fair for companies to be under investigation permanently. Now you pronounce definitively to say the report is done. Can you give us an assurance that all companies that were under the cloud will either be in the black box or in the white box, so that is the certainty. Last, do you have some indication on this final report that you say you are going to submit and all of that? What sort of timelines are we looking at? I'm in particular interested in it happening within this term of office of this administration, so that we don't have unending problems, unnecessary handovers to the EFF government that is coming through in the next term. Thank you. All right.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the reports. I chaired the previous meeting, which gave rise to the summary of actions what to be taken there. But as I'm receiving these reports, specifically on the trade on this side, it presents a very serious scenario. That scenario, unfortunately, puts Treasury as a crime scene. Because when you say you can't touch anything up until this investigation has been done, it's as if Treasury as an institution is a crime scene. So you're quarantined, you can't do anything as far as this kind of a project is concerned. I think that's a problem which engulfed DPSC, that now they opt to have an HR system which is going to be independent of these other things up until, which is a very creative way of saying, because we need this integrated HR system, and let's have it. While you are busy with your own things, clear yourselves in as far as these elements and the findings by the SM. But that kind of a scenario is as well a bit unfortunate because it is moving away from the intended objective. And it puts you as a treasure, well, use you, not the surrounding yourself, but treasury, into a scenario which would probably provide a situation whereby in 19 years time, 19 years, 19 years, you went to government 2005. Cabinet, here we are, want to implement this scheme. Here is our plan, the project plan, approved, and then the cabinet memo that someone runs through the bill. So in this way, you are soiling the actual intent of cabinet. So national treasury is inactivity in this good intent has been delayed such that you go to cabinet 2005, 2013, and many other ensuing instances. So cabinet granting in trust that national treasury should deal with this kind of problem. What is happening now is you are saying DPSA should await another cabinet's approval in terms of the integrated system, independent of the original system, which has begun to create a trend which says the failure in the system, the failure in terms of the outcome around here, and the inaction then poses another threat to say, because the SIU now can come to anything. The SIU comes to us and says, here are our findings, and this is final. We've briefed our own attorneys, senior counsel, already in February. We're now sitting in March. So the intent on their part is very clear, that we've made findings, and our findings in this way have been somewhat compromised. Yes, I agree that finding justice is one of the tedious routes that individuals are affected or to pursue. I see one way of those, the clarity on certain things. On whose behalf are you in Treasury pursuing this? Are you pursuing it on behalf of Treasury as an institution, which is the custodian head of Public Finance Management Act, where there's breakage of the system, the breakage of the law? Treasury should be the first to fight that kind of breakage, and to be with those who want to protect the pursuance of that part in as far as Public Finance Management Act. So that's where I'm a bit down, on your own activity. Then came the postponement of the meeting. Like the chair says, one would have expected something. He says, this is where we are in terms of the project. It should not be SIU Treasury on the project itself in terms of its own primary intention. Something which is not there. 19 years down the line from Treasury, not any other institution, not any other department, from Treasury. That's where we are, which is somewhat one thing that we need to have a fresh look into. If it was CETA, what would have been the situation from Treasury to CETA? If it was DPSA, what would have been the situation from Treasury to DPSA? So it tells us about the behavioral instance in as far as inward looking of the entity at the institution, the Treasury. So our plea last time was that go back, deal with these kinds of things, and you're still coming back. There's no finality on your side dealing with these kinds of things. SIU is coming back to say, we're true, we're final, we're moving on, we're signing off the report, there's no way back. So we're here to ask that question. What true? Because the SIU is saying we've listened to them, we found out that the same issues that we've dealt with, whatever those issues are. So we're not changing our. They informed you that they're not changing their view. But here you are saying to us, you're still pursuing with the SI. I don't think you want to be misled by you, as you would somewhat do with other institutions. This platform must be cleared away from such in the oversight that we somewhat conduct. We have enlisted a number of oversight activities, which includes the Finance Portfolio Committee, investigations that have taken place, and then finally the outcome as referred here. Jam your present in the previous meeting. Leaders. What? Thank you very much.
Can you say where to Emmanuel that song by Stephen Cox? Where do we go from here? Honorable Adam. Peter, I can't sing.
Same here, Jay. But I know the song. By Deborah Cook. Now, Chair, when I was listening to Advocate Matthew, I got very worried, scared and frustrated. The first thing that came into my mind was Prado and the termination of the contract results and alternative measures in place, which led to the current status of our rail system. That's the first thing that came into my mind. And I think the question is where to from here when the SIU is saying there could be a possibility of moving in the direction of terminating the contract. And here we are, we're told this is a bad form of pressure in terms of integration. And if we get to that stage of finally terminating without other alternative measures in place, then I really want to change. That's my serious concern. But there are issues of clarity, advocate. You have advocated, which you indicated that some of these disciplinary hearings, they don't necessarily need to wait for the final report to the president. Now, this is a presidential proclamation issued by the president. What then happens in an event where, or let me differently put, is the president obliged to accept all the recommendations, or can he say it differs with some of the recommendations? And if they are implemented, what then becomes of the status of those recommendations when they have already been implemented? I just need clarity in that aspect because the report, the final report, is yet to arrive at the doorstep of the president. Now, does this imply that everything that would have been implemented prior to receiving a final report by the president must be agreed and supported? I would need clarity in that regard. That is my only question. I think if there are any issues of clarity, depending on the response, I will then make that follow-up check. Thank you so much.
Okay. I refer to slide 14 because I think the elephant in the room is bullet point number one. What are the implications of the SIU having identified irregular SDM process for this. That is point number one. Secondly, to reiterate a point that colleagues have made. If National Treasury says that if you're waiting for the SIU process, what exactly in the processes are you waiting for? If the SIU says conclusively they've arrived at findings and that you have presented information which they believe does not materially change the outcomes. So what are you waiting for? Which aspect or stage or level or... where are you? But I think hopefully you may provide clarity for us in this whole situation. What are the implications of the SDM process? And what recommendations are contained therein? Is it termination or remuneration or what? I think that would help to allay the collective outlook that we have.
Just as a quick roundup, perhaps from National Treasury, to just tell us what finally happened of the debacle around the technicalities of that issue around whether it's a regular expenditure or whatever. You know, there was a tiff between National Treasury and the AG, but the AG and the SIU were on the same side in saying this is something wrong, as it were, and Treasury was saying, no, it's not wrong. He even went to court and what have you. I just don't know what finally happened to that. At some point, there was some political intervention that was proposed to, I don't know whether it all happened. Can we just get clarity to what was the final agreed categorization of that issue? And if indeed the AG and the SIU were correct, what was the consequence management of that multi-semester? Thank you.
Hoffman, you actually remind me. In the 2020-2021 report, it stated that the department made a payment fee of 67.6 million rand for technical support and maintenance of software license for the IFMS. The issue of fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the IFMS and on software is under dispute. The disclosure of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the previous and current financial year did not necessarily mean that the National Treasury Management agreed and accepted such payments as fruitless and wasteful. So the status of that dispute is important, particularly against the background now, DG, when you say that no payments have been made. So what's happening with maintenance of IFMS? Does it continue, and if does it not, and will it not mean incurring expenditure down the line? So are we not delaying the inevitable in that at some point in the absence of clarity, or if the matter is then clarified, that would have to then incur costs? I'm just going to what my mistake, because the AGS findings remain. But can we get responses? Ashunisha, you will answer what's yours. We'll start with Treasury and then Team will come to you. We have your delegate to Team and then Team.
Thanks, Chair, once more. Let me allow the DG and then you further delegate to his team or to answer specific questions.
Thank you, Liam. Thanks, Honourable Chair and members, for those questions. Let me start with them, and then I'll ask the Accountant General to come in as well, in particular on the issue of the expenditure and the contact with the AG. The question started with where do we go from here? And part of the reason I think all of us are unsatisfied with the current situation is because of the following. We have a legally binding contract with the IFMS service provider. And that contract is legally binding until the status of that contract change, and we've got certain obligations in terms of that contract. What we started doing last year with the accountant general was to say, how do we renegotiate the contract so that we can at least allow this matter to go forward, and we can ensure that we get to the goal of implementing IFMS. We then made a decision following the first report that was received by the SIU that it's not prudent for us to continue along those lines, and we also sought legal advice in this regard. Because we don't want to be in a situation where we are renegotiating a contract in order to get better value for money or trying to enter discussions with the supplier when there is the potential that this contract might be declared invalid and unlawful. And that's where we stopped. And essentially our approach has been to wait for the SIU process to be complete and then take it forward from there. What's important to note, and this goes to the question of the finality of the report, because we are waiting for that in order to take the matter forward. We made submissions, representations to the SIU on the 22nd of January. We wrote to the SIU on the 25th of March and asked, can you please give us an update in this regard so that we know how to take this matter forward? In the response by the SIU, it was indicated to them, by them in writing to us, that they will not be tabling their final report, because we had sought clarity, will the SIU be tabling their final report at SCOPA? They indicated they won't be tabling their final report. What was important for us is to wait for that final report, whether it is the final report that is submitted to the President or whether it is a final report that is submitted to us. Once we have that, then we can proceed and we can take advice from counsel on how to proceed. It's also important for us to be clear about the fact that we have in our representation to the SIU indicated, and it wouldn't surprise any of the members here, that we disagree with their findings. We disagree that the contract was irregularly awarded, and we take each step of the procurement process and we outline why we believe that we have complied with the procurement process. So all of that detail has been provided. We disagree that there has been fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and without going into the details thereof, we explain why we disagree. And we've made a comprehensive submission in that regard that runs, I'm trying to check here, that runs into 75 pages or so. So to answer the question that the honourable members have asked, is our approach has very much been, as soon as we are given the clearance, whether it's in the form of the submission of the report to the President or whether it's in the form of an indication that this matter is now, that this report is now final, then we will proceed on that basis. And we will then take forward the process insofar as formalizing the representations that we made in order to demonstrate why we believe that
the allegations in the report should be contested. Of course, that puts us in a bit of a bind, because what does that then mean for IFMS going forward? And what we've tried to do is to say, at the very least, let's not hold up the DPSA process, so let's allow that to go ahead. And then depending on the legal advice that we receive, how do we ensure that we can still go forward with some kind of process, despite the fact that we are in this difficult situation where we have a legally binding contract, we have representations that we want to make and that we want to further formalize based on the advice that we are going to give to our senior counsel, and then the further rollout of the process. So unfortunately, I'm not able to give a very satisfactory answer, because we are stuck in this dilemma where we would like to, once the process is final, to take the matter forward, but we also don't want to go into the detail of what some of these disagreements are, because we would leave that to the right process between ourselves and the SIU, but it certainly is contained in our representations. I hope that covers the questions around where do we go from here, albeit in a very unsatisfactory way, and what we are waiting for from our side. We did confirm, and I'll ask the Accountant General to talk to this, we did confirm that in the current financial year there's been no outlay against the maintenance and support of the contract. It is on hold pending this process, and I'll ask the Accountant General to come in that regard. There was a question about out of scope, which is broader than the IFMS. It's a broader government issue, Honourable Money. The way that the procurement and the contractual system works is that proceeding outside of the scope of a contract immediately becomes irregular, which is why as soon as there is some kind of deviation from an original contract, that has to follow its own process. And that has to be provided for in the supply chain management policy of the relevant institution. So the guidelines and the prescripts of this regard is quite clearly defined, precisely because of the fiscal risks that are attached to that situation. Now, we do know that there have been instances in the past, certainly in state-owned entities and departments, where this has happened, but that is certainly something that remains a matter that is irregular unless it is resolved in terms of the department or the relevant entity's supply chain management policy following the various prescripts. I believe I've covered the other questions. If I haven't, I'm sure the honourable members will indicate. Let me hand over to the Accountant General just to talk to the issue of the dispute with the Accountant General and the expenditure in this regard.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, honourable members, honourable chairperson, deputy ministers, colleagues. With regard to the dispute with the Auditor General, what members would have known is that the Treasury has received a qualified audit report in the 21-22 financial year, and that it was in relation to what the Chair said, the maintenance and support around 67 million in that financial year. There was a subsequent qualification in the 22-23 financial year, and although there was no expenditure in that financial year, the qualification was in relation to the comparative number in the annual financial statement. So that qualification related to the expenditure that occurred in the 21-22 financial year. in the last financial year, which is 23-24, there has been engagement with the Auditor General on what does this mean in terms of an audit outcome perspective in relation to IFMS. What is clear from those engagements is that the National Treasury, from an audit perspective, will no longer be qualified on its account in relation to IFMS. The reason being is that the actual expenditure happened in preceding years, and the comparative number is no longer a matter that's subject to a dispute. So for the 23-24 financial year, there is a high likelihood to be an unqualified outcome, and these are ongoing engagements. At the last meeting, we did indicate that whilst we look at this dispute, it's also important that we do not isolate this dispute purely as an IFMS matter, but the issue around why this matter is under contention has broader public interest considerations. We've seen in the Zondo Commission report, the DG also indicated that we see that in the state there's a lot of risk averseness by accounting officers, officials in taking decisions. And the reason why we want to ensure that we get this principle correct is because it does not hamper decision making in the state. So as part of that process, we've been engaging with the Auditor General. We've also engaged legal counsel in that regard. But in the same way, we don't want to unnecessarily litigate against the Auditor General. So partly because the SIU in its report also made findings on whether it is fit with the wasteful expenditure. As the DG also has indicated, there is still a fundamental disagreement on whether that expenditure is fit with the wasteful expenditure. But it goes back to what is the principle underlying when you have a valid binding contract and you are obliged under that contract to pay maintenance and support, what do you do in that circumstance? And when you go back to the PFMA and try to unpack that principle, that is really where the heart of the dispute is. When you have a legally binding contract, what do you do in that case? So this is a matter that's still ongoing. It won't have a matter, it won't have an adverse impact on the audit outcome, but this is something that we are still engaging the Auditor General on. My last point is that we do have a number of disagreements that we work with the Auditor General. Our relationship is quite cordial, very professional, very collaborative, and we ensure that when there are disputes in the system or disagreements in the system, we work together to resolve it. And once again, with this particular matter, we are trying to find how best we resolve this matter. Thank you so much.
Thanks once more, Chair. So, except on the implementation of certain modules, e.g. the e-recruitment by GPSA, which for my understanding they want to proceed outside this IFMS, on condition from the National Treasury's point of view, on condition that such a system will be compatible at some stage with IFMS. Except on that issue, I think this is a clear way forward on what we need to do there. But other issues, they seem to be contingent on two things. The first one is the SIU report still has to consider the representation that we have to make or we are making as National Treasury, and for let's say they consider our representation favorably, I take it that their finding may have to be reconsidered. If that doesn't happen,
It means that the matter will have to be ventilated in a legal platform, which is a tribunal. And there are two possible outcomes there. One outcome is for that legal platform where this matter was articulated. One possible outcome is that, okay, the contract is valid. SIU, you are incorrect. Treasury, you are right. And that will save us the burden of this service provider having to take us to court and say you've terminated our contract illegally. And there are claims that a service provider can make on the state on the basis that you've terminated the contract illegally. If the outcome of that legal dispute is that yes, this contract is invalid, well, both parties might decide to take the matter to other levels, appeal and all. Suppose they agree. We agree that yes, this contract is invalid. It means that we'll terminate. And it doesn't stop the service provider to take us head on as a state. So if argument say we agree all of us that look, this contract is invalid and therefore we need to terminate it, but we need the service. We're just whispering with advocate in TV here, giving one example of ESCOM, in which is ABB, where we said the contract is invalid but ESCOM needed. So, ABB continue, however, when the contract comes to an end, you go. So that's one possibility. But the issue is, what do we do in between? We could say, okay, should we wait for all these legal processes to go on? And precisely because we need this system in the meantime to avoid disruptions and all that, what do you do under those circumstances? And another example, which we're just whispering amongst ourselves here, and it's good that we're speaking into each other, is the example of the first in which the court said this is invalid, but in the meantime, we want you to find an alternative to deal with this issue. So, how we move forward, Chair, like I said, and therefore, once we agree that in the meantime, once all these issues are being sorted out, there will be issues about how do you treat the payment of the maintenance, the services, and that's where that issue between us and the AG needs to be sorted out. So I'm afraid, Chair, that this meeting may not be able to provide a clear way forward on all those issues because there are a lot of dependencies. How we move forward is contingent upon how we basically deal with those three elements. So to the extent that this meeting provided update and the complexities of the matter on how this will move forward, I think it is from my point of view very useful and very progressive, and it was necessary that we do meet. But I do think that we do need to find a way of amongst ourselves as different stakeholders on how do we proceed on this matter. It may not be before it may be after the, I'm not so sure, but we'll also get guidance from you, Chair, and the committee on the timeline within which we deal with this issue, even though some of the issues may be beyond our control in terms of how these legal processes basically move. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Really, just to pick up on what the DM has said, yes, there are various legal variables which could be considered to sort of assist on a legal basis the process forward. So, as we sit now, just to really answer your question, Chair, on the bullet point that says a CF process not followed. The consequence of the finding is that we will, as I indicated, we will institute civil proceedings to cancel the contract and recover. But the DG makes a mention of a legal status. The legal status in our country is that the contract remains valid until it's certified. Cancelled and certified. But of course, in this circumstance, the context is that National Treasury says we are disagreeing that this contract was entered with irregularly, and therefore would possibly not institute a process to terminate the contract. In other instances where we have made this similar finding and the State Department agrees with us, over and above us instituting the civil proceedings, they then kick the contractual provision to terminate the contract. So that's a separate process. So in this instance, it does not apply. So it means we will proceed, institute the civil proceedings, they will get court papers or special tribunal papers, National Treasury. Oracle will be cited, National Treasury will be cited, and that process will proceed. And we will of course argue our cases in the special tribunal. But that does not say, these possibilities that the DM has indicated cannot be engaged upon to find, what is in the meantime that could be done to sort of assist the operations side. There's a business to run, but there's also this legal processes that are ongoing. And hence the referral to an examples of ABB, which is a really good example that we have referred to. A finding of this similar nature was made, and ESCOM says, if we take ABB out of the power station, there's going to be problems and so on. So the parties sat down, right, which at the time included National Treasury as well. And then there was a scenario that was reached that assisted the process forward. I'm saying it's similar, and that's not the same. But there is an opportunity to engage around a similar scenario, similarly to the matter of SARFA. There are elements of that. So those were presented really as matters upon which parties can engage from now to say, how do we engage so that we respect each other's processes and possibly assist the business to deliver. Honorable Lee, on the five disciplinary referrals and the NPA referrals, at the risk of repeating ourselves, that would not be able to mention the names unless the criminal process has taken its course and the people have been charged, similar to the DGs as well. Hopefully that will happen soon. The blacklisting, the question was whether it was based on the malfeasance on the part of Oracle. We did make a finding of conflict of interest. And that conflict of interest runs between, an official or some of the officials and Oracle. And that we will unpack when the matters go to the forum as we argue our case. And based on that, we have then found that the process, the SDM process, amongst other findings,
was irregularly affected. Honorable Mai, on other companies, I quickly just checked with my colleagues. There were no other companies that were investigated with the exception of Oracle. There are other companies that bid it for this system, but they were not investigated. But the principle you're making is indeed true, that if there were other companies that allegations were made against and they were investigated and the process is completed against them, either way, they should be informed. Just so that there's certainty. We agree with that.
Timeline for the presidential report. We were working on that report, so I'm looking at not beyond the end of April that we should finalize that report. The point that you asked, Honourable Wai, and no, it's not as IFMS related, but now that it's asked, I think we are duty bound to respond. The Fort Hare investigation. That investigation is ongoing. It's also making its own findings and so on. And as you correctly indicated, that after the interdict was obtained, that we could not investigate the master's degree. The court clearly indicated that the scope of the proclamation did not cover the master's, and the court also intimated that, you know, that you could get an amendment of the proclamation, which is something we do in the ordinary run of our business. So then we prepared the amendment, which we submitted to the Department of Justice on the 7th of July, 2023, for the proclamation to be processed. Because remember, it gets processed through the Department of Justice and then to the Minister of Justice, and then the Minister of Justice processes it to the President. Yeah, Chair, I think that covers.
Of the non-submission, I was paraphrasing what was the status of the findings ahead of the non-submission of the report to the President.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Honorable Hadebe. As I indicated, when we investigate, and every time the evidence is gathered during the investigation, and this is a typical example of that. In this investigation, we have found that the contract is irregular. So we need to act and cancel it. We will start that process, special tribunal, and the process will proceed. Similar to the disciplinary processes, blacklisting and so on. So when we submit the report to the President, we make mention of that, indicate the status of where they are. The President has at no time, and in fact has respected the legal due process, so that at the end of those processes, we do go back to the President and say, this civil proceedings was undertaken, has been concluded, and these are the results. Similar to other outcomes that would have been undertaken. So really the President doesn't need to support or not support the outcomes. It's based on legal processes relating to specific outcomes. I'm not sure if I would have covered it appropriately.
National Treasury, I'm going to make a very bold statement. It seems to me that this is the hill you are prepared to die on. Because in July 2015, National Treasury's Audit Committee requested the Internal Audit Unit to perform a review of the IFMS payments
for 14-15 financial year. The internal audit investigation revealed a total of 54 findings, of which 49 had catastrophic risk ratings and 5 had high risk ratings. The investigation indicated weaknesses in internal controls to mitigate the risks and risk monitoring systems. The internal audit investigation indicated that internal controls could not be relied on. The audit committee presented the report to the then accounting officer in National Treasury in March 2016 and formally requested an independent forensic investigation. Deloitte was awarded the tender on 1 October 2015. Deloitte found no wrongdoing by National Treasury's officials working on the IFMS project. The only conclusion that was made was that there was a lack of human resource was partly to blame for the adverse findings on the internal audit investigation. Then, the forensic report by Deloitte was rejected by the audit committee. A new tender was issued for the forensic investigation, and Nexus was awarded the contract on 1 February 2018. Nexus completed the investigation and the report was submitted to National Treasury on 28 August 2018. That report highlighted the following. 1. Irregular expenditure to the tune of 273 million rand. 2. Non-compliance with SCM processes. 3. Poor documentation of crucial contract information. 4. Lack of project management controls. 5. Payment of license fees for licenses not being used, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. 6. Weaknesses in internal controls. 7. Lack of formal business case for the IFMS project. And 8. Insufficient resources to fully implement the IFMS project. Now the SIU comes and says the contract is irregular. You disagree. So it's the case of everybody's wrong and that you are right. That's why we are here. These were investigations at your insistence that were came out of your processes. And because you didn't like the outcomes, you rejected them. Now the SIU comes and makes a similar finding of irregular SCM process. The AG is wrong, you don't agree with their finding. There's now a negotiation about the outcome to say that no, the comparative numbers and so on and so forth, and so there will be no qualification. Now you disagree with the SIU and you don't accept their findings. What do you expect? This revolving door that you are playing before us is, quite frankly, as I see it, totally unacceptable. And I think it's reckless and irresponsible coming from National Treasury. That processes that you initiate arrive at conclusions, you reject them, and then when an independent body arrives at similar conclusions, you don't agree. You don't agree with the AG. You don't accept the issues around the irregular expenditure, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. DM, this sits as a glaring indictment on National Treasury and is material in why we are here. And something has got to give. Because whether we like it or not, IFMS has become an albatross to the fiscal. Whether monies were not paid in the last financial year, that's nice. But how consequential is that in the greater scheme of things? So that's why I'm sitting here and I'm trying to wrap my head around Sigubi. You see, what this reminds me of, which we all venture down memory lane, is the typical case of the Road Accident Fund, where they change the accounting standards. The ASB tells them that they shouldn't have, AG tells them that they shouldn't have, the Accountant General tells them that they shouldn't have. We did an assessment check to them that they should not have done so. But they insist that they write. Now we're going to adopt some sort of a Hambagahle rescue mission along the lines of SASA, an example, the ABB, what we were saying PRASA should have done to create a crisis or to resist responding to investigations and outcomes. And then to say, well, we still have to do something. I can't get my head around how this can come from National Treasury. The authors and crafters of National Treasury regulations who give guidance to the broader ecosystem of public finance management. This can't be you. So Deloitte had an investigation, Nexus had an investigation, SIU has an investigation, there's AG audit outcomes. We disagree with all of that.
Thank you, Chair. I think we are being delayed by technicalities of procedural matters. Why I'm saying that, Chair, we now know that the report has been completed, but there is no final report that has been submitted to the President. Now, National Treasury is saying they are waiting for the final report. Yet, from the SIU, it's clear that the content won't change. But for National Treasury to act, there has to be a final report. That's a technicality. Hence, I ask the question, what then happened upon the President receiving the report? Is he expected to study, accept or reject in order for the report to be referred as being the final product? So is National Treasury in essence waiting for the report to be finished to the President and the President to confirm or pronounce on the status of the report? Hence they are saying the completion of the SIU will inform the way forward. So you can't have a way forward. Now, that's a technicality, because the question that I was asking is that will the legal processes that have unfolded and the findings change? And you are saying, based on history, it has not happened that precedent, a change was contained in the report. So now we are being delayed because of technicalities. How soon can the report be finished to the President, and what then becomes the process and procedure once you have tabled your report to the President? Is it only after the President has given you a go-ahead that you will be able to finish the report to the relevant parties? Because I'm trying to drive to a stage where National Treasury acts on the report. And I guess, listening to them, it might be unfair, I don't know, that's my take, it might be unfair to act on a report that has not been declared final. I don't know, I'm trying to put myself into their shoes and their thinking around this matter. But I think they would have sufficient knowledge and understanding in terms of how proclamation works and the finding contained thereof, and when to act and when not to act. I think they should, at this current juncture, they should be aware of such, and technicalities shouldn't be used to prolong the inevitable. But from their response, it's clear that they're saying, no, we're not happy with your outcomes, we're going to challenge. So we are again prolonging the inevitable to actually challenging the content of the report. So I think the sooner we get an understanding of the final report being made final, that the better for them to act. But it's quite disappointing that National Treasury will resort into technical aspects in remedying this situation. Thank you, Chief.
On slide 15, the SIU categorically says, after thorough review and evaluation process of the representation, the SIU advised National Treasury on 22 March that it still holds the same position, and therefore the SIU is fine with that. But also,
thank you very much, Chairperson. The outlook is worse. If our outlook were to focus on the SIU structural thing, I'll take another tack. My focus is on the functionality of Treasury's performance-related approaches. You go to cabinet 2005. Cabinet is shredded. You say, Cabinet, here we are, IFNS 2005. You go back to Cabinet 2013. Here we are, revised approach, and Cabinet trusts you, grants you that right. SIU just arrives 2020 to be accurate. SIU comes with a gazetted proclamation 31st January 2020. Even at that time, nothing. And the second point of their own investigation is your failure to come with outcomes on which you came to Cabinet 2005. And at that time, you were 15 years with no product on the team. So what are you actually there for in this matter? Because your failure is making others to fail. See, the story of GPSA is up to this matter. That is, we really need our HR integrated system. We've been looking into this mounting treasure. Come with it to us. But for 15 years before SIU intervenes, no product. Is there any way that you can prove to us that for that failure, that failure alone, you have taken action? What sort of action you have taken? Even before SIU was there, your own audit committee takes a decision to say something is wrong here. The audit committee. So as an accounting officer, have you look into the back of the train and say, what is it that the boss have done by that time? Lest you're part of it. So those kinds of things ought to be looked into to enhance the functionality of the system, because the system failure gets into our CETA. We say, no, CETA is in, there's no clear activity from CETA. They were here last time, sir. No, we're ready. We're only disappointed by induction from Treasury side. The same with GPSA, the letter from the former minister, which was withdrawing at GPSA, those was no action. Before SIU was there. So that's why I would like us to be drawn into the SIU Treasury's dispute. But the fact is, for the period, you spent money, no product, no result.
And when others say that was irregular from your side, you know, it become a law to jam the actual accountability process. So those are the kinds of things that I was looking into. I begin to say, in your role as an accounting officer, what is it that you're taking responsibility on these matters? Let's give SIU processes, the law, the legal processes, but the administrative processes, to ensure that what you went to cabinet on, you hold your word based on the initial cabinet memo, which cabinet agreed on. So that's where I am. You see, matters of SIU and the justice and all that kind of thing, those are other matters. So let's not be drawn into such. Now, your matter that relates to accountability frame, consequence management. And in general, if you fail at that court, consequently, I'll take the responsibility for a failure at the court. If you fail, let's say you go to court and fail. Consequently, are you taking responsibility as an accounting officer? Those are the kinds of things that we must do. Government, let us stand still, because we can't produce the IFMS on the table. You went to cabinet. It might have been that way where cabinet would say, let's change the responsibility, it goes to one time in the mission, scroll along the treasure, and something else would happen there. So on this project, you're holding government advancement. The court processes take their own time. So you're saying government must be held in such for longer the chain.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just clean up one point about the outer scope before I get to the issue. I didn't mean the outer scope in the sense you were describing. That is an obvious one. I was talking about the outer scope of something that a religious scope. An example, I mean, if you look at, let's say, the HR module as an example. If you had a module that had to do whatever, and then somebody in the HR department decides that, okay, just to fine-tune this, can we have a program or something to be able to compute this particular something? You know, just a subset of what is already there, that's what I'm talking about, with these IT things that I have found, that generally those things don't seem to be even anticipated. So then you end up with a subset being called out of scope and being costed additional. I have a problem with this. So I'm trying to get to a point where you, as National Treasure, get a system in place that we don't have this kind of thing. I mean, can give an example, the Department of Labor, there was a Siemens project that had to do transversal execution. Next thing, every little thing that you needed to do was deemed out of scope. So you have a monthly fee that you're paying for Siemens, but you put a day-to-day thing that you do. So that's the out of scope I'm talking about, not your one. So that's the one that you say. We have a system in place to make sure that doesn't happen. But apart from that, Jefferson, I think what we're dealing with here, we're dealing with few adjectives to talk about this. I think we're dealing with an animal farm issue. We're dealing with an arrogant department here called the National Treasury,
a department that is a law unto itself, a department that has adopted the Stalingrad strategy, it does not want to be held accountable by anyone. Actually, the whole country is afraid of national treasure. This audit report, chair of the internal audit report, I included myself as the Zondo Commission, and because at that time, in 2018 already, scope of that time had put a figure of 1.8 billion. And the expression in that TNG report was that 1.8 billion down the drain. This is the expression as scope, 1.8 billion down the drain, without no business. So I take this thing because I thought Zondo was interested in these kinds of things. But obviously he was following individuals and not evidence. Even though I put evidence there to Zondo to say, here is something that needs to be followed. But because national treasury is untouchable, no one wants to touch national treasure. I don't know why. And we're sitting in this mess here, all because of the rogue activities within national treasure, and no one seems to want to deal with it yet. And I actually don't think sitting here with the DG is going to give us anything, because he is resigned to defend. And defending the all these institutions, be it SIU, be it his own internal audit, be it AG. The AG is the apex on matters of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The apex point. When that institution pronounces, everybody listens, except the central treasurer. I mean, we can't have a situation like this. Even now, they are gearing to find all kinds of loopholes in the report. And I say, okay, wait and see the final report. And as the final report comes, then they're going to have another issue. No, we don't think so. We can't operate like this. I honestly don't think it's going to add any value to say the DG must report anything. I think what this committee should do, we should find a way to say, how do we deal with this rogue behavior of national treasury that is the law unto itself, and in the process billions of lands are lost. And I think a question was asked, whether by you, Chair, if this rogue activity that is here was happening in another department, that particular DG would have been suspected by now. If something would have happened and at the instigation of national treasury, they would have been on top of it and be behaving like paragons of virtue, all of that, on top of some other DG. But this time it's there, and this is not to be held accountable. So, Chairperson, I really want to appeal to this committee that we must put treasury on the crosshairs. It's treasury that is messing up the entire system for 20 years, and it's 20 years counting. Well, it's not like the end is in sight. The end is not in sight, because they are squaring to challenges, even the report that's going to come, you know? So I just wanted to make those points here to say, I think it's a waste of time to say DG must respond and whatever. It's going to defend. I mean, the accountant general sitting next to him is his staff member or somewhere in his organogram. So they're going to agree with each other. So what's the point? So I really just think that we should note all these reports and everything, and there should be a clear decision of how do we deal with this rogue department that is supposed to be supervising others. This is a problem, because they are very hard on all other departments. Why is it that we have a situation here where National Treasury itself, having messed up billions of rands, that it doesn't look like anybody wants to take action on them. Even Zondo does not want to do anything in his report. This is submitted in his report. I submitted it myself, so I know this for a fact. Even Zondo is afraid of national treasure. So who must touch national treasure then if nobody must deal with them? So I really think the elephant in the room is national treasure. It's an arrogant department. It can do no wrong. Nobody, I mean, you,
the AG is not a political body. This is an independent ethics body of audit. If you argue with them on the definition of a fruitless and useless venture, then really, which side must you take? The SIU chapter says has made four concrete findings. They find irregular SCM processes. They find non-compliance with SCM policies and legislation. They find conflict of interest. They find fruitless and useful expenditure. This is the SIU report. I'm not aware of many things that they would have lost in various tribunals. They are very thorough. I'm not just saying because they are here. They are very thorough, I should say, these people. And they've got no vested interest in anything. They just want the truth. They just want to make sure that nothing goes wrong in the public service. Now, if you have institutions like that and you undermine them because of one particular department, it's a problem. We can't put institutions in place that are meant to be watched off and then undermine those principles. So, as I close, Chair, I don't think we should be taking a very clear position on how to deal with the rogue behavior of the National Treasury. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Let's go to National Treasury.
Thank you, Chair. Just to respond to a few of the questions raised, the question by Honourable Adebe on the issue of the report, our legal advice, Chair, has been very clear. We are constrained from doing anything until we have a final report. And the understanding in that regard is a final report that is submitted to the President. Once that takes place, then the various options that have been put on the table can be discussed. And I think that's best way to answer that. In terms of the actions that have been taken on IFMS itself, what we started doing last year was in order to break, firstly, we've obviously on an ongoing basis been reporting to SCOPA on the delays on IFMS implementation. What we started in 2023 was to say that despite the challenges that we have, let's enter into a process to renegotiate the contract so that it can move forward. And we've reported on that before. And the renegotiation process really focused on two issues. The one was we made an initial investment into IFMS, an initial fiscal outlay. In order to obtain better value for money for that, the negotiation centered around recouping that investment in the form of a credit from the service provider that we can use going forward. In order to deal with this challenge around the outlay that had been taken place without any progress in terms of the implementation of the system. We also started discussions with the service provider around how we can shift to a cloud-based solution to get us better outcomes and better value for money. So in terms of the question of what has been done, those steps started being taken in 2023. The challenge arose from our perspective in terms of the SIU investigation and what that means for the contract. And we felt it prudent and received legal advice in this regard that we should not continue with those renegotiations until the SIU report and process has been finalized, and then we can take it from there. In the meantime, what the team has been doing is thinking about what does a IFMS post all of this actually look like? Because our priority is to learn from the lessons of the last number of years and be able to implement a system that does not prejudice the fact that we have a legally binding contract and a process is underway in this regard, but we can actually get to the outcome, which is an integrated financial management system to replace the legacy systems. So from our point of view, those we were not idly sitting by, and that's why we did the renegotiation process. However, as soon as this process is done, we can then take the next steps to expedite whatever a solution on IFMS looks like, Chair. And certainly, that is the commitment that I'm making as someone who stepped in to this role in September last year, with Shabir having joined not too long before, and having to grapple with how do you take this matter forward in an environment where there is a pending SIU investigation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Perhaps as the DM comments will take into account what we say. What happens after the President receives the report? You know, I think this seems to be something that really need to clarify. I have said, and I need to repeat, that the findings that we make, even before the President's report is submitted, those stand. And those are for the legal standing. Right? They have in themselves legal standing. If we have made a finding that the contract is irregular, based on that we are able to institute civil proceedings, even before the President's report is submitted. Let's assume as we say that we're aiming to submit the report in April, assuming we institute the proceedings first week of April, there's no one who will come and stand up in court and say, no, this proceedings cannot proceed because the President's report has not been submitted. You know? So that part is finalized. So whatever decision needs to be made has to be made based on the findings that we have made. There is absolutely no need to wait for the President's report because the findings are final. And there are judgments out there that we can make. You know, in the PPE environment, there were findings that we made before the final report of the President, and those findings had legal standing. So I think it's important to clarify that. How soon can the President's report? We are aware, because now of all this, we have paused that to really complete this representation period. We'll speed up the finalization of the President's report, but I repeat, it's not going to change the standing, the legal standing of the findings. Chair, just to really reiterate, in the process of the investigations, I mean, it happens in various instances where we go in the institutions that there would have been some other investigations and audit findings. We do take those into account. But of course, at the end of it, we come out with our independent findings. So in this regard, and I'm glad the Honourable Chair has made reference to those previous reports of Deloitte, Nexus, and the AG findings, we in the process of investigating and looking at the information, we looked at those, but we arrived at independent findings at the end. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chair.
Sorry, DM findings.
Yeah.
I said DM is
oh.
Also DM findings.
DM findings. No, thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. I do think that this feedback has been very useful to us as National Treasury. And what I would suggest, Chair, is the way forward is that you give us a moment to go and reflect on this. May I? In the light of the comments, which are very clear, in the light of the comments that the committee has made, and how you feel about the way in which this matter has dragged,
and the way we have responded. So if you could give us a moment to go and reflect, and we'll come with the suggested way forward, even before the report is submitted to the President, in the light of what Advocate has just said now, and also take into account the previous report on this matter. You just have to guide us on the time within which we need to come back to you with some kind of way forward on this matter, because I do think that we need an internal conversation within Treasury on how we should take forward this matter in the light of your comments and suggestions that you've made as a committee. I'm not in a position to suggest the particular time frame within which we need to come back to the committee on how we think we should go forward in the light of the comments that you have made, Chair.
Thank you, Colonel. Parliamentary program, yes, because we are committed until the 28th of May, and of course we have to pay the indulgence of the presiding officers and so far as whatever latitude of them will be given to us. So we will engage our chairperson responsible for committees, so that at the very least we just conclude on this particular aspect with a clear roadmap in terms of what needs to happen, because the constituency period goes up until the 21st of May. But we can ask for a special dispensation. So I'll engage the House Chairperson and colleague and see what is practical and feasible, so that at least this matter is just a conclusion of it, a roadmap to take forward.
Mr. Chairman, I think that is entirely in order, but what I want to clarify is that we are asking National Treasury to come back to us with a roadmap. From what I've been hearing this morning, they don't now need to consult with the SIU. They know exactly where the SIU is. They've got the findings. There's no more talking needed there. They don't need to talk to the DPSA because there's a process going there. They already, and it might form part of the report bank, but it's not really the essential thing of the big picture. And is my assessment correct? If this is now, we're asking National Treasury to come back to us, and I think the Deputy Minister is indicating the same way.
No, I wanted to understand how much time would be think of using it, so that they don't come back and say, well, the time given up was not sufficient to cover something tangible.
But did we say the August 2024 then?
Oh, Chair, thanks. After consulting with the DG, the proposal or the request we want to make with regard to time, is 3 weeks. Within 3 weeks, we should come back to the committee, if that's okay.
Right. Yeah. I thought that check with SIU, that if it's easy to mention that Oracle is like you said, whatever, what different with the individuals? I mean, it's also a futuristic person that you just mentioned. What's the difference between Oracle and the other individuals that you
afraid to tell us. Let's conclude on the timeline. All right. So the matter I request you to is that I had 14 days, but Passover season, I take it as well as they took on. I'm going to request that we get a written report in 21 days' time, so that we can have a basis upon which to continue engaging with the presiding officers. However, I must hasten to say, we postponed 3 weeks ago at the behest of National Treasurer seeking to consult. So I say that to draw your attention, we can't keep on kicking the touch like this. So can we get your response in 14 days? We will get our secretary to liaise with the PLO so that we can be able to sort of tie this one down. DM, DPSA, we'll come to the issues we've raised in our mind just now. DM?
Thank you, Chair. As you're concluding, I don't know whether you wanted to give Dr. Manisa the opportunity for what you say, but I just wanted to say that we do appreciate what your team is doing forward in the sense that DPSA should actually try to move ahead with processes that are required around HRM. And maybe to say that they need to develop an integrated HRM system that should actually okay, am I now audible? Thank you, Chair. And I'm actually saying, as you are concluding, we appreciate what you're putting forward in terms of really giving DPSA ability to manage to continue around HRM systems. And I would agree with the DG or who actually indicates that, because these matters are actually decided at the cabinet level, where what it means is that there should be an integrated human rights management framework that should actually then be prepared for cabinet. But earlier it was indicated that it's about e-recruitment. It's not only about e-recruitment, it's about a whole lot of other matters that are HR related, like performance management development system, the leave management system, the organizational structure, HR planning, and HR administration and operations. So we appreciate where the process is now. It's unfortunate what has happened has actually happened in the past, but for the Department of Public Service and Administration, I think we do agree with the fact that maybe if we are actually allowed to proceed with the work that needs to be done, that will actually make it easier for us. Thank you.
No, thanks, Tim. I was still going to give the DM an opportunity to make concluding remarks as soon as we are done with all the issues. So we'll come to you and you can wrap it up. But I think National Treasury hears also the agency that DPSA is placing on the matter, that technological capabilities of 2005 when I was in matric are far different to the technological capabilities of 2024, and that the delays are now catching up with us in terms of where we should be. Yeah, I'm that, yeah. There was an issue that Babu might have raised.
This is a qualification there, even on your presentation, that you need an independent system which might be integrated later. But I don't want us to move out of here and say, okay, National Treasury could push Oracle to handle your integrated HR system. That's not what we're saying. We're saying it on the strength of what you're saying. That so long you continue with
independently, and then you get into whatever it is on the integration somewhat. I think we must take that qualification along in consideration of that.
Thank you, previous chair. Point noted. And maybe to say that it needs to be costed in that system of structure.
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. What we have said is that we do mention parties when matters, one way or another, are in public in terms of the findings. It is public knowledge that this contract is between Oracle and National Treasury. So to that extent, it is clear that the public is aware, and we have mentioned that Oracle has been referred, based on our findings, for blacklisting. And again, blacklisting has its own process that it follows. Thank you.
I can just say before, I'm not bailing him out per se, to say that at times we've understood to say investigations or cases may be at the initial stage and may be given time. We have received names before, so there's always been that. That's why when the matter was raised, sort of, when you said that we kind of got him. So at times it's been that maybe it's at initial phase and an investigation not to be prejudiced. But I think as the reports come out, we will be able to get those. I want to just say two things. Of course, we remain here seized with a matter of the development of the reporting matrix of SIU reports by the President. So to say to Treasury, the reliance on a Presidency submitted report, it may really be a box-ticking exercise in the greater scheme of things, in the sense that we picked up a lacuna here. There are reports dating as far back as 2001, sitting with the President, and we are seized in the Presidency now, at our insistence, developing a reporting matrix, giving the complexity of the investigation space and what may arise out of reports. So for example, a report about Department X may touch on the municipality on one aspect and an SOE on the other. There has to be a concerted coordination about how recommendations of the diversity of the space. And so what the SIU is doing to say, as and when information arises or evidence is presented, they proceed, must also be understood in that context, that there's a lacuna in the Presidency, but we are quite certain that we'll close it off now, there's progress in that regard. The second and final point, Treasury, don't invite trouble for ourselves, in the sense that you be the ones to set into motion precedent, which will come back to frustrate you as National Treasury and the work that you do for public finance management. Because people tend to mirror what those in authority do. Oh, National Treasury is having these kind of pushbacks. Then they imitate it. The strength of leadership as you now lead public finances is to admit when you are wrong and then institute the corrective action. This fishing expedition doesn't sit well. It's 20 years later. I was in grade 12. One gentleman in our class of 205 is planning our 20-year reunion, and I felt very old. So I wonder about some of you in this room, if I'm feeling old. So you see, honestly speaking, you can't have a project within the purview of National Treasury handled like this. Because where's the standard? Where's the model? Because then everybody is justified Medupi, Kusile, and all these housing projects throughout the country. Because if you are not committed to your own commitments and your own timelines, you invite scope creep, cost escalation, corruption, and all sorts of other things. Because the other question to me is IFMS still suited for the times? And it's, if you look at the technological advancements that have taken place over the past 20 years, there was no Twitter in 2005. There's now ChatGPT, whatever. This, in your reflections, dear, please reflect on that as well, on what this means for the collective integrity of National Treasury in the greater scheme of things as the North Star. We will hold National Treasury to a higher standard because you also in one way become players and referees when you can discharge National Treasury notes and instruction notes and so on and so forth. You have got that advantage which nobody else has. Now it must sit as an indictment on you that you have got a project of this magnitude in your area 20 years later, it's not done. And it's riddled with all sorts of things, and now another conclusion saying that the process was irregular. You have to get past this. Because if National Treasury collapses, then the country is in serious trouble. I could use stronger language. So please, let's resolve this. 21 days, a written report. I will engage the presiding officer so long so that this matter moves. Any concluding remarks, DMDPSA?
Thank you, Chair. I think I've actually also already concluded with the remarks I've just made now, but we do appreciate the process. Thank you.
DM comes. Because we still have to come back to that future problem at some point.
Thank you, Chair. As you can see that we don't really play much role here on this matter of IFMS. We really are spectators of the spectating the rest of this morning, but it's valuable input, good interactions that we are observing today. I forgot to indicate that with me, I've got the chairperson of CETA, Mr. Kruben Pile next to me, and the acting CEO, and together with some staff members, so I forgot to mention that I'm with this delegation. But I just to say that I think you have succinctly put the question around the evolution of technology and the rapid pace at which technology is evolving. Quite spot on. The thing that we're relying on in the past, can even say past 5 years, those solutions are no longer applicable because things are moving at a very fast pace. We now have a generative AI which is capable of doing a lot of things, which can even emulate you speaking without you raising your voice. So things are moving at that pace. I'm not saying that the service provider is not capable of supplying the latest technology that we require, but just to emphasize and buttress the point you're making that things are moving very fast, even ourselves. We are grappling with all this movement. CETA is proceeding to enable government in a number of areas, e-government and all of that. So I'm sure it's an appropriate point to have that conversation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
TV?
Nothing more from us. Honorable Chair, thank you very
much. Do you have any comments?
No, thanks, Chair. We hold ourselves to the highest standards, such as governance and financial management, and we ought to be held accountable to the higher standards as National Treasury in terms of governance and financial management. And yes, Chair, we might have come across in handling this matter as not holding ourselves to higher standards, highest actually, not even higher, but higher standards. We may have come across as not meeting the standards that are required of us. And thanks very much for reminding us and on the necessity for us to be held at the highest standard and hold ourselves as National Treasury to the highest standards of governance and financial management. Indeed, we should be the pinnacle of the best and the highest standards in the country and in the world as well. And then I think we will, because you're right, if we don't, it will have a demonstrating effect. Other entities, other departments will use it, you'll use us as a measure according to which they conduct themselves. There's a saying that says, monkey see, monkey do, and we'll not want to set a bad example, and if we came across in our attempt to explain the way in which we're dealing with this matter, we came across as not holding ourselves to the high standards, so we really want to apologize, and we've heard the feedback. We are listening, not arrogant department, we are a listening department, and we take criticism kindly, and of course when we respond to those criticisms, we are not always right, but as we do so, we don't want to project ourselves as arrogant. So Chair, we have a timeline, and we think that these are reasonable timelines within which we will have to come back to the committee, basically to account to South Africans through you, because it's through these committees that we as government were held to account, and you are the tribune, you are the representatives of the people. People speak through you. So we take seriously what you've said, and within those timelines that you've given us, we'll definitely come back to you. And thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thank you much to the DMC, GSD, Executive Zone TV, and the SIU colleagues. Thank you very much. The meeting is done adjourned, and safe traveling versus people, particularly during this season of the Easter weekend. Take care, the meeting adjourned.